Thank you, gentlemen. This is rumor control. Here are the facts.
Oh, she won't take my last name, Rolo. What do I do? What do I do? What's wrong with these girls? Why don't they act right? Isn't that why you came here? Is that why you came here? I should have put the gladiator intro. That would have been almost better. I know this is going to be a hot one. Welcome to the midweek show. I'm going to be as brief as possible because I will be on with Ryan Stone on his show in just about an hour. So this is going to be an effort in being as concise as I possibly can be. I have so many people ask me this question about last names or hyphenated last names. Why is it that women will not take their last name? First off, why are you getting married in the first place? Second off, if she is not the woman who wants to marry you or wants to have your babies instead of I need to have babies or I just need to get married, it is time for me to get married. You got a bigger problem than worrying about what your choice of last names are. As we have become a more gynocentric social order, the idea or the practice, let's just say, of women refusing men's surname, their last name, their family name, has become more and more popular. And the rationalizations for it have become even more popular as well. So I wanted to do just as deep a dive I can do today about last names and why it is a big deal to women right now. I've been reading a few articles explaining why this is, or the rise in popularity of just having to, the man keeps his name, the woman keeps her name. And unless, of course, that guy is so high value, quote unquote, alpha male, whatever we're calling it today, that the association, the brand association of having that guy's last name as part of her name sort of completes her, right? Or builds, it's a brand building exercise, let's just say. If you've seen some of my older posts where I'm talking about how dating today is really an exercise in brand management, this is part of that brand management. That's number one. There's a lot of other things that go along with this. I am going to be including a post that I wrote, I think it was last year, it was 2019. It's called Selective Breeding. And in there, I talk about why it is that women do not want to assume a man's surname anymore. Part of it, of course, is the fact that women do not want to be attached to something that they don't think is going to endure the test of time. Now, why is Rolo talking about this right now? Well, we were just talking recently about marriage. I think it was the Bill Gates debacle. And boy, did that explode, right? I mean, now they're saying he's a perv and he's had young strippers in Seattle come to his pool parties and everything. I called that. Let me tell you right now, before we continue any further, I did say that this was going to happen. I said that by the middle of this week, and what is it, Thursday, the May 13th today, right on time. I read an article this morning. Thank you very much, Rugby, about Bill Gates and his pool parties and his bachelor parties and strippers here and strippers there, strippers everywhere. So let the politics of personal destruction begin, and everybody's going to pile on because they all think he's the number of the beast or the Antichrist or whatever your particular fantasy, superstition is. Have fun. I called it. Anyways, but the reason why people were throwing last names and this kind of stuff at me was because they were talking about prenuptial agreements. And I get a lot of questions about like, well, he should have had a prenup. Oh boy, for a guy that smart, he should have had a prenup. Or a guy that rich, he should have had a prenup. Well, there's a reason for that. A reason why a lot of guys don't even bother with that is because most guys who have a lot of money to begin with are hopeless betas to begin with, because the amount of experience, the life experience with women, with many beautiful women, with interacting with women, with figuring out what works best for you, what your particular game is, doesn't occur to guys who tend to do very well financially, unless they're very, very talented, like maybe they're a musician or something like that. So when you're talking about a guy like Bill Gates, when you're talking about a guy that's got like quite a bit of money, usually they don't have the occasion to, let's just say, develop the social intelligence necessary to think about things like a prenuptial agreement, particularly if they're just, sort of this computer nerd. There's these guys who are just kind of fell into, I'm not saying fell into, but maybe that's the wrong choice of words, who were in the right place at the right time and made a lot of money as a result of that, or made a lot of money in a field where it sort of appeals to gamma males. And if you want to know what a gamma male is, just go look at the sociosexual hierarchies episode that I did way back in the day, or look up Vox Day. Those are his terms. But the guy who's like almost too smart for his own good really doesn't have any occasion to learn female nature. In fact, to those guys, female nature is basically transactional. And since it's transactional, and since they don't have a lot of money to begin with and suddenly come into a lot of money, they don't really have an occasion for to understand game, to understand how women's nature really functions. So those kinds of things really, as far as understanding women and understanding like how to take precautions is almost like speaking a different language to them. And they're focused on other things. They're focused on making money, right? They're focused on their mission. But to the expense of understanding women's nature. And that's what we're going to kind of delve into here just briefly, because you have to know, I'm giving you a little bit of a, again, I preface things here so you understand what I'm talking about. When we're talking about prenuptial agreements, there's the legal aspect, okay? The logistical aspect is that prenuptial agreements were made to be broken. There is a, and I'll put the link in the description here, but there is a really great documentary, and I believe it was done around, I want to say it's 2014, maybe it was 2012, I'm not really sure, but it was funded and narrated by Dr. Drew Pinsky, and it's called Divorce Incorporated. If you want to know why Rolla Tomasi is kind of like, down on prenuptial agreements when it comes to marriage, this is why. There's a full section in there explaining why prenups don't work. In fact, they're a challenge for attorneys, for divorce attorneys to break. And when you have somebody who has that kind of money in the first place, it's just a minor, inconvenience at some stages. You have to constantly also update that prenup. Also has nothing to do with alimony, has nothing to do with child support, has nothing to do with like child custody. Okay. It might protect your assets, but it's not going to protect you when it comes to those rules. And there's various ways around that. Go watch that. Instead of me blathering on about why prenups aren't a big deal or shouldn't be seen as like sort of a fail safe for marriage, go watch Divorce Incorporated. Or I think it's called Divorce Inc. Or no, Divorce Corp. I think it's C-O-R-P. Anyways, you'll find it. I'll put the address in the description here. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, because in that documentary, there's one, I can't remember the, I know he's a divorce attorney. And he said, one of the things about a prenuptial agreement is you're beginning the marriage with the intent or with the, at least the possibility or the potential that it could fail. And people have asked me, Rolla, do you have a prenuptial agreement? Are you protected? No, I don't. And I never did. And I didn't need one then. And I don't really think I need one now, honestly, because I'll tell you this is that, if it's going to go down, it's going to go down. And as far as prenuptial agreements are concerned, again, watch that documentary and you'll understand why they're, especially for guys who are just like sort of mere mortals. We're not talking guys like who have the kind of money that Bezos and Gates have. But the guy was saying that it starts out the marriage with the potential that it's going to sort of self-destruct. I look at women not taking their husband's last name very much in the same way. It's almost the female way of saying, I need a prenuptial agreement. Only it's done not financially and not out in the open, but it's more psychological. I don't want to have this guy's last name. I don't want this guy. I don't want, first of all, laziness might have something to do with it, but I would also argue that it is because women do not want to be associated with your genetic potential, with your genetic legacy. Why is that? I'm going to explain to you why. We have to rewind the tape a little bit here, and we have to look at some statistics. First of all, statistically, men and women, their average age of first marriage in the United States, remember this, and for other countries, it's older, but in the United States, it's about 30. It's like 29.7 or 29.8 for men, and it's like 28.7 or something like that for women. That's in my fourth book, as you can see right here. In the marriage section of Religion of the Rational Male, it's my fourth book. Have a look at that. I quote a lot of marriage statistics, and that's a very thick chapter in that book, by the way. And that's one of them. So I have to look and say, okay, well, why are men and women getting married or forming families? Because when we talk about marriage, I think that's it, we don't really think of it in terms of like, oh, sexual access, exclusive sexual access, exclusive, family, you know, like commitment. Like, we don't really think of it in those terms. Technically, I mean, if we're looking at it from a financial perspective, it's family creation. It's we're going to form, and really it's a corporation, right? It's, we're forming a collective. We're forming a tribe. Me and you, baby, forever. Till death do us part, forsaking all others. And that has been getting the average age for that family formation is getting later and later and later in certainly in women's lives. I think men would much rather, in fact, statistically, men would rather get married earlier, would rather pair up, and would rather start families earlier than women do right now. And the reason for that is because we empower women. So it's called the fempowerment movement. So it's about career. It's about get this done. Start your business. Do this. Do that. Wait for the high value guy. Really, it's not so much about creating careerist women. And I know a lot of people will disagree with me about that. And to an extent, I do think it is. But I think it's more so about women wanting to play the field and stay in the game and continue their party years or their hoe phase, if you prefer, right up until the very last minute. In fact, sometimes past the last minute. Actually, quite often past the last minute. And as I've said before in my other books, that is the epiphany phase between the ages of, say, 29 and 31. Once again, right around the time of first marriage for women is right around the same time that that women go through their epiphany phase. Surprise, surprise. It's not convenience. It's I don't say it's not by design. It's certainly by convenience, but it's also by necessity at that particular time. Now, what happens is women get to that point, into that epiphany phase. They say, okay, I got to get right with God. I've had my fun. They'll put that in their dating profiles, their Tinder profiles, whatever. I've had my fun and now I want to get serious. Now that the party's over and the lights are going to come on, I got to find somebody. It's not, I want to marry you. It's time for me to get married. It's time for me to have children. My biological clock is ticking. And that's why that average age of first marriage is right around 28.7, almost 29 for women in the United States. In the UK, it's actually 32 or 34. I can't remember. But those are some numbers and those are some statistics that you kind of have to sort of put into the mix here as to why do women not want to take your last name? Well, usually women have to make necessity their virtue. And so when a woman gets into her epiphany phase and she realizes at some point she's going to hit the wall. And by hitting the wall, I don't mean physically. I don't mean, oh, she's unattractive. It's not get even time, Mr. Blackpill, Mr. Doomer. It's not get even time. It's not here comes my revenge time. It is when women acknowledge that they can no longer compete with their younger selves in the sexual marketplace. So when a woman gets to be about 33 years old, she comes to the realization, whether cognitively or unconsciously, however subconsciously, that she can no longer compete in the same sexual marketplace that she used to be able to when she was 23 years old. And so therefore, there's an acknowledgement of some sort that says, okay, I better find some guy. This guy will do. It's Mr. Good Enough. In fact, there was a lot of outrageous articles from women saying, you know what? If you get to be about 28, 29, 30 years old and you find a guy who's good enough, stick with it. And that caused so much outrage because women deserve the best no matter what. They're princesses. Now they're queens, right? And that's how you get someone like Tommy Lahren, who is panicking in that one last video I did in August of last year, I believe it was August of last year. And I did a rebuttal to her video about how there's basically the video was there's no good men. And so I did a rebuttal to each one of her little points and all that good stuff. That was actually one of my more popular videos. Actually turned down an invitation to go talk with her on Dr. Phil as a result of that. So you'll get to that point where the entitlement meets the necessity. And there has to become some sort of virtue signaling. There has to be like, I got to get right with God. I got to make him jump through hoops. I got to make him obey these rules, because if I don't, then that triggers what's known as the hypergamous filter. And when a woman gets to about 30 years old and she's debating on sort of reprioritizing what's important to her, that's when you hear her say, oh, I've had my fun. I want to get serious. I want to get right with God. I want to do things the right way this time. I want to, I'm going to make him wait, four dates before sex. You know, of course, if she meets the alpha guy at that time, it's not like all bets wouldn't be off. But I'm just saying that when it comes to the long-term planning of things, it's not so much this guy, this is the guy I'm in love with. It's this is the time I have to do this because the clock is ticking and the top clock is running out. Whether women consciously acknowledge that or not is kind of up to the individual woman. However, we can see statistically that they wait longer and longer and longer. So there is something else that's going on right there. Now, I've argued this, that when a woman gets to be about 30 years old, she like inside of her head, she has what's called it's an internal argument, a conversation. It's her ego and her id. And the id says, I really want to have sex with the hot guy in the foam cannon party. I really want to go back to 23 and spring break in Cancun. Can't we just have fun? Can we just find the right guy? We could probably lock him down. And it's the I want the sensational. I want the pleasure. It's the hedonistic part of the I'm getting Freudian, I realize. Bear with me here. I have a point to this. Then the ego says, no, it's time. We got to get married. We can't do this forever. We got to get right with God. We got to get serious now. We've had our fun with that guy. Now we got to start. And so this is back and forth, right? The id says, oh, we got to do this. We got to do it. I want to have this. He's so hot. He's a hot fireman, right? And then there's the ego that says, no, you're never going to lock him down. He's a drug addict. He's a bad boy. Don't worry. Sheryl Sandberg says we'll get along just great with this guy who's this beta in waiting over here. And so there's this sort of compromise in reprioritizing what would be acceptable for long-term intimacy and a long-term relationship for that woman. And the problem with that is that it kind of goes against a biological and evolved imperative for women. It goes against what I've called her existential fear. And the existential fear for women is this, and I'm going to try to put this as succinctly as I possibly can because I've done full shows on this before. The existential fear for women is having hypergamy, having the mating strategy, having reproduction taken out of her control by inch or by mile. It doesn't matter if it's like, okay, let's just say for sake of our, the most extreme end of that spectrum of taking away women's right to choose, women's, control power over reproduction is rape. That's number one. That's on the most, at the opposite end of the spectrum, that's where that is. And then little by little, it's, well, do I really want to, is this guy the best for me? It's the hypergamous question, or it's the hypergamous doubt, which is he the best I can do? That's what hypergamy is based on. Is he the best I can do? And that might change from time to time to time as a woman matures into her later years, right? When a woman gets to be, that question resurfaces, by the way, when she gets to be about 37, 38, 39 years old, for much of the same reasons why she doesn't want to take your shitty last name. Because when that woman has to compromise for a guy who her id says, this isn't the best I can do, let's hedge our bets. I don't really want to breed with this guy, but I kind of, it's the best thing I got going right now, and so I'm going to work with it. Or you've got the woman who's already had children with the bad boy in her earlier years, and now she's looking for a guy who is going to be the stepfather, right? The father who stepped up, right? Looking for that guy who's got the three Ps, right? On the beta buck side of hypergamy. Protection, provisioning, and parental investment. And that parental investment can apply to children that are not his. So remember that. Don't always think that it has to be the guy who's actually creating, breeding the children with her. It's the guy who's going to provide and be parentally invested, even in children that aren't his own. I would argue this, and this is going to be real controversial. I know that, but I would argue that the reason why women are very hesitant about taking the last name of a man who would accept that situation, the guy who wants to be the stepdad, the guy who wants to step in and take control and take, you know, and be the guy who steps in and becomes the dad who stepped up kind of guy. That guy right there, I'm about to show you something here, and because this is the zeitgeist here in just a second. But that's a guy that triggers, this guy is not the best I can do. I'll marry him. I'll even have sex with him, but I know in the back of my head he's not the best that I can do. That guy is very much like this guy that I'm about to show you on the screen here. There we go. There we go. All right. This was from, I have no idea who this guy is. Somebody put this in my Twitter not too long ago. Men who demand DNA tests disgust me. I mean, even if a kid isn't yours, why would you pass on the chance of being a dad to one more child? Why? Of course not. If someone I hooked up with got a child and said, it's mine, I'm taking up the dad role with pride. If someone else sired that baby, it's his loss. That is exactly what women want you to think. That is exactly the kind of gaslighting of yourself that a gynocentric social order expects from beta males. I would also argue this, and I don't know this guy personally, but I have heard this is, I've seen this tweet a million times, or the sentiments of this tweet a million times. And these are the guys that women will not take their last names for. And because they know damn well that this is not the best that they can do. Because the guy that they had sex with and they had the babies with, that guy that they tried to lock down, the alpha that they tried to lock down in their party years, that was, if it wasn't the best they could do, it was certainly better than this guy. And why is that? Because when a man says that, what he's telegraphing to that woman is that I value my paternity so little that I will take care of another man's child. I will go against my evolved biological imperative for paternity, the most important thing to any male organism, higher animal, then I value it so little that I will go and I'll do this. I will go and I'll raise this man's child and I'll be your permanent cuckold. It's as if the guy is accepting his own cuckoldry. And I know that sounds like, oh, he used the word cuckold. I'm using it in the clinical, in the technical sense here. So I'm not saying, oh, yeah, you're a cook. I'm not using it as an invective here. I'm using this is the definition, the legal definition. And so when you are willing to do that, when you're willing to step up to the plate, what you're saying is, I value my paternity so little that I will take care of another man's child. You can make it sound as ennobling as possible. Like, oh, well, you know, we children need fathers. Yeah, they do. But guess what? The girl that you are settling on, the girl that you want to marry, that chick, she's already had the baby with that guy's father. She chose that guy for the alpha seed side of hypergamy. And now she's choosing you as the beta need side. And not only that, you're stepping, hey, me, I'll do it. And I'll be happy to do it. And you know why? Because you've been gaslit. You're gaslighting yourself into believing that that is in some way noble. Going against your biological imperatives. Now, I'm not saying we don't need adoptive fathers. I'm not saying we need stepdads. I'm sure there are individual anecdotal stories that would be a success story of this. I'm just saying, from an evolutionary perspective, that's what's going on. So when you get enough of this going on, you get that enough of this embedded into a larger, you know, gynocentric society. Yeah. That the practice is going to be some sort of virtue signaling, or it's going to be some sort of rationalization as to why that woman doesn't want to take your last name. Now, what is a man's last name? I'm glad you asked. I'm going to read something from my post here. It's called, the post will be in the description down below. It's from a post I did called Selective Breeding, and I'm going to read you just this quick paragraph here. She doesn't want your shitty last name. Or your shitty genetics, for that matter. Patrilinear surnames are a symbolic stamp of ownership for men. They give a man his genetics and they give a name to his genetics. A surname is associated with a specific genetic line. For instance, my daughter's name would be Bebe Tomasi, right? The last name, that identifier, is what you give to your genetic material, to your line, to your family. We call it a family now, but it's really your tribe. It's really your genetic legacy has a name, all right? So a man's legacy is his genes, and those genes need an identifier. One of the more controversial topics that I debate online is the refusal of men's surname by their wives. Women keeping their last names or hyphenating them in marriage is now a common sign of their independent spirit. Marriage is only acceptable to the strong, independent woman when it looks more like an egalitarian business arrangement rather than a complementary pairing of a man and a woman who understand and accept the nature of their own genders. Traditional marriage looks too much like ownership for feminist wives and new male husbands. And by that, I mean, you're not a man, you're actually an ally. That's the terms used for you. Blue pill conditioned men are far more likely to be okay with their wife's decision to keep her name hyphenated or even take her name. After all, it's the progressive thing to do, right? And most believe on some level of consciousness that his accepting her independence in this way will make him more appreciated by her. So if I go and do this, or if I allow this, or like as if you had some say in it in the first place, that woman decides that she doesn't want to have your surname for whatever reason. If you're cool with that and you're on board with that, it makes it seem like you're more secure in your masculinity. No, what you're saying is I value my paternity so little that I'm cool with this. My prospects for reproduction are so low that I will go against God knows how long my family has been in existence, even if your last name is Joe Smith or Jones or whatever. You have a very common white bread last name. Even if that's the case, you're still willing to go against that. Again, what is the subliminal? What is the subconscious message that is sending to women's hypergamous doubt? Is this guy the best that I can do? Well, he's willing to accept that. It's not a sign of strength. It is a sign of you not caring, and it is confirmation of your low value. You value your paternity so low, so little, that you will accept, you'll even take her last name, or maybe you'll blend your last names together. A lot of women will call this they will say that this is some sort of patriarchal system of ownership. And a woman being given away by her father is some sort of sense of ownership that with this, which is like sort of this vestige of a patriarchal time or something like that, or accepting a man's last name. When a woman is in love with you, when she wants you, this conversation doesn't even happen. Now, I'm going to talk about some cultural differences here in just a second, but let me continue here just really quickly. Blue pill conditioned men, again, after all, it's a progressive thing to do. And most believe on some level of consciousness that his accepting her independence will make him more appreciated by her. The truth is this: his acquiescing to her in this way only reinforces what her hindbrain has already confirmed. She has paired with a beta male who wouldn't give an afterthought to insisting his genetics bear his own name. He confirms the low quality of his genetics to her hindbrain. That's the subconscious message. The medium is the message is not just for women. It is for you too, gentlemen. So there are a lot of convenient social conventions that come along with this. And here we go with the reasons why that go along with this. Insistence on keeping her surname. Just like the excuse of men taking up space warrants terms like man spreading, women and new males will appeal to pragmatism. Now, these are the things that I get quite a bit from guys who want to fight me on this. She's a doctor, a lawyer, a soon-to-be famous person. She's Grimes, right? She's not Grimes Musk. She's just Grimes, right? Or she's Candace Owens, who still has not taken the last name of her husband, at least not legally, at least not publicly anyways. And she needs to maintain the identity for public relations. Again, dating, even marriage, is now an effort in brand management. That's where this goes. Okay. Otherwise, she'd totally take my last name, bro. I don't want her to have a crummy last name like Butts or something. Okay. Well, I have a really shitty name, so I don't want her to have that, right? Then there's taking a man's last name is an antiquated symbol of patriarchal ownership of women. Haven't we evolved past this yet? Are you so insecure in your masculinity that you'll insist on her taking your name? These are a few of the cover stories, but the latent purpose is the same. Women's hindbrains must hedge their hypergamous bets with men they know are beta before pretending to commit to a lifetime of breeding and parental investment with them. That's why. That's why when women get to, that's why it seems like a good idea for women when they are in that epiphany phase, when they were between the ages of 29 and 31 and the chips are down and they know that the lights are going to come on at the party pretty soon. They got cash out of the casino. That's when this looks like a good idea. That's when the id and the ego say, well, we'll marry this guy, but do we have to take his last name? Because maybe down the way, maybe down the line, maybe sooner or later, we'll meet a guy, we'll meet the one, or we'll finally be able to get back with the one that got away. And, you know, I don't really want to get with that guy. Now, I'm going to really, really piss you off. How many gentlemen, I don't know how many of you guys have heard this before. You probably have. I know that I have. How many guys have had to deal with the situation where a woman names their child after one of her exes? I'm going to get into the alpha widow dynamic in my next episode of now I'm at 31 minutes, but my next recorded video, we'll talk about the alpha widow. And then I'm planning on also doing an episode on war brides, but I think this is fitting for this particular episode here. I constantly see this either in forums, or I get this in my comment threads, or sometimes I see it on Twitter, or certainly in my social media. Occasionally somebody will throw on something from like Reddit, like am I the asshole from Reddit. And the guy's pissed off because he discovers that their child, usually it's his son. Probably very rarely a daughter, but usually it's a son, and the son is now 8, 9, 10 years old. And the father discovers that the name of the son is Jim or whatever, or Adam, or, you know, Ethan, something like that. And that is the name of the man or the guy that she was getting with back in college, who she thinks was the one that got away. That's the one that she's alpha widowed from. And why am I bringing this up is because there is power in that symbolism, power in that. And I don't mean that woo power, but I mean it in terms of a want or an emotional desire, emotional connection that woman had, not to you, the guy who was good enough, the guy who stood up, maybe the kid's even yours. It doesn't have to be his kid. It's your kid. And she named the child after the guy who really rocked her world back then. And maybe when she was drunk, or maybe when her sister was drunk, or her brother, or somebody, one of her best friends that you'd never heard of before, comes in from out of town, have a few drinks, and he says, oh, what's your son's name? Ethan. Oh, really? Like, you mean Ethan, like the guy he used to bang back in university? And suddenly that guy's eyes are opened. That's, you want to talk about a red pill moment? That's your red pill moment. That's when you have that trauma. You go, oh my God, she named my kid after a previous lover. But why should that matter to you? Why would you care? Why would that be a big deal? It's a stamp of his ownership on your kid that you had no idea about. She has no problem with that. In fact, she'll be a little coy about it. Oh, I should have told you, sorry. You know, I just like the name, whatever it is, makes no difference. It's the same thing. If you're the kind of guy that says, oh, dude, it's totally cool, don't worry about it, she can keep her own name, you're the kind of guy who's going to be okay with her going, yeah, that's all right, she can name our child, my genetic legacy, after the guy that she was banging in the foam cannon party in Cancun on spring break when she was back in university. That you should be, if you're okay with her not taking your surname, you should be damn well okay with her naming the baby after her former lovers too. You are cuckolded by a ghost. Been cuckolded by her. She's an alpha widow, and you've been cuckolded by her widow, no matter who that guy is or whatever. So I want to make that as an addendum. I'm going to talk about that when I get to the Alpha Widow episode too. But I wanted to throw that in there because it's that name, it's that association. She, you can apply it to what's called the Sexy Sons theory as well. So bear that in mind. Now, last but not least, before I go, I do understand that in certain cultures and in certain societies, particularly in Muslim religion, I know that women are supposed to take their last names, so keep their surnames. And in some ways, in some cultures, that I understand why that is. But another, you have to remember, it's still patrilinear. She's keeping that last name because her father's last name is applied to her. It's still a patrilinear thing. It's not like, oh, well, she's doing it because it's, you know, also she's doing it for a different reason as well. So because it's cultural, it's religious, it's just part of her tribe to do those things. But again, look at the latent function of that before you start digging into, well, she's going to be a famous lawyer and she needs to keep her last name. No, she just doesn't want your shitty genes. She just doesn't want your shitty genetic legacy, and she doesn't want to have your name attached to her. That's why she keeps her name. That's why she keeps her name, or she hyphenates her name. So she's kind of like, okay, I guess we're blended family now, even if it's just your first marriage. So those are some things to keep in mind when it comes to why is it that women won't take your last name. I would argue this, and this is just me tagging a little thing at the end here. If you are with a woman and you are, even for whatever reason, you are planning to get married, or you think you're going to she's the one, right? This is the long haul. If you think she's the one, I got another episode for you. But if you, for whatever reason, I'm not saying maybe you don't have good reasons for it, maybe it's a religious thing, but if that woman will not take your last name, you need to eject. You need to eject and reassess why it is that she wants to do that. I know that sounds harsh, but you need to reassess. Most guys who are willing to accept that they're going to be offended by this, but they're also going to be willing to overlook it. And the reason why they're willing to overlook it is because they are the guy that woman's id says, oh, he's not good enough. We'll never be with him. Okay. Compromise. You know, I know he's not as hot and funny and sexy as the guy in the foam cannon party, but he's got good prospects. He loves his mom. He's a good provider. He'd read homework to the kids. He'd read books to the kids. He'd take him to soccer practice. He's a really good dad. He's just not a good cat. He's not exciting. Okay. Well, let's make a compromise. We don't take his last name. How's that? Okay. Deal. And then we make up all these rationalizations as to why that woman shouldn't do that. If you're the guy that's going to accept that, you need to not only reassess her, but you need to reassess why you in the first place would have ever accepted that to begin with. There you go. This has been The Rational Male. I am Roel Tomasi. Thank you for watching. I will be back on Rule Zero on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time, and it will be on Rich Cooper's channel. Talk to you guys later. Thanks for watching.